हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 48. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Akrura also considered the necessity of the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. He thought that the transcendental activities, instructions, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna are all for the good fortune of people in general. The people can remain constantly in Krishna consciousness by discussing the Lord's transcendental form, qualities, pastimes, and paraphernalia. By doing so, the whole universe can actually live auspiciously and advance peacefully. But without Krishna consciousness, civilization is but a decorated dead body. A dead body may be decorated very nicely, but without consciousness, such decorations are useless. Human society without Krishna consciousness is useless and lifeless. Akura thought, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, has now appeared as one of the descendants of the Yadu dynasty. The principles of religion are his enacted laws. Those who are abiding by such laws are demigods, and those who are not abiding are demons. So this here is very nicely stated here. The principles of religion are his enacted laws. In other words, you have the laws of God, but when you follow the laws, apply the laws, that's called religion. Right? So that's the whole point, is that following the laws given by Krishna, then that is, you could say, is religious. Not following what Krishna gives, that's not religious. Right? So then Krishna recommends that one is religious. That's why he says, do your duty. That means be religious. Do what you're supposed to do. But don't just do it because of the benefits you'll get. Do it because it will please Krishna. That's the whole idea. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We hear that Akrura's meditation is actually very different than what we heard before, the residents of Vrindavan, because it's a lot about position of
yes.
the Lord,
yes.
and also it's a lot about himself connected to that
yes.
Supreme Personality.
Yes. Yeah, about his fortune and all that.
Yeah.
So that in one is also a way of glorifying the Lord, how special the Lord is. Right? Because it's also in relationship in that, because he has a relationship with the Lord. Right? He's a family member in that. I think he's an uncle or something like that.
Yeah.
So then you have all that. That's the flavor of Dwarka, that all these things of sweetness and of majesty are mixed. And so you may see more prominently one, more the other, a mixture of the two, or anything in between. So that's what makes Dwarka, or at least say Mathura, and now at this point Mathura. But those pastimes, they're you could say they're Goloka Vaikuntha pastimes. Because all five rasas are there, the element of sweetness is quite prominent, but it's not the prominence. So that particular mixture like that, then it's quite well received like this. So then they can deal with these, you know, this or that. But then the Brajabasis is that they can have that understanding, but it won't be about that. It'll be about their relationship with him. So they have the relationship with him, they're fully surrendered unto him, they love him completely, and then as the Supreme Lord, he can take care of all things nicely anyway. So even if he is, it's about their relationship with him. And then this is an added thing. Just like the parents will, they'll have affection for their children, whether their children can save them from so many situations or not. So in Braj, it happens to be they have that affection and he can save them. So you see, is in danger in that, then they'll remember that, or he does extraordinary things. They'll remember it's because he is the Lord. But it's that that's not their impetus to have affection for him. Right? We don't see it as an udipan in Braj that he's the supreme Lord, or anything of his greatness or grandeur is an udipan. It happens to be a side point along with their affection for him. While in Mathura, then it is Udipand, his greatness, his majesty. So it's kind of like they go back and forth between worshiping him as God or as Paramatma, and then as Bhagavan, like that. So they have this aspect where they're appreciating his godness. But then there is about being God, it's more than who he is as a person. Why we use the term Paramatma is just so that we're familiar with is that middle stage. In that, you're respecting his position and he's being worshipped because of that position. But then the point is that position is also a person. Right? Just like it's appropriate that someone in a position of authority, you respect that authority. But you can do that without actually dealing with them as a person. It means they're a person, you're dealing with them personally. But it doesn't mean that you're dealing with them personally, meaning it's about them as a person. It's about them as that authority. If it was a different person was in that position, you'd deal with them the same. So it has nothing to do with the person. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, at court, everyone deals with the person as the high court judge. But outside of that, they don't have any relation with him. Does that make sense? But family and friends, then they deal with him outside of that. So whatever the situation, they're always dealing with him as their friend or family. Does that make sense? So the Braj Basis, then you won't see that so much. That's why that's the natural thing. So you're going to have going into, and then you're going to have going out of. Right? You generally don't have things change suddenly, you know, unless it's your changing flavors and all that. But here it's that you've come into the Braj pastimes. You know, you started off with Mathura. Then that Mathura meets Vrindavan, and then coming in, and then everyone getting adjusted, and then going through, and then you come up to the gopis and their pastimes, and then now we come back out, some of the demons, and then now out with the Krura, and then we'll go on to the next pastimes. So then it's natural at this point that this will come up, because then this is the conclusion of the Vrindavan pastimes, but it's the preparation for the Dwarka pastimes. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Maharaj, you're like Akrura, he's thinking about how when he meets Krishna Balaram, you know, he's going to touch their feet and all, you know. So basically whatever are his anubhavs, you know, they do not fit, you know, in Raja, you know. So
we should tell him to quit Braja. We want to, what do you call it? You know, the, how you say? The movement of Swabraj. You know, so.
Huh? Swaraj.
Swaraj.
Yeah, but you didn't Swaraj catch me.
Like that, I say. Surrounded by Cementicists. Cementicists, whatever. Yeah. Yes? So we should toss him out. As soon as he comes, then Yogamaya should be there and just be pointing the other way. This is not for you. So Krishna just has to walk out on his own, and only when he gets over there, then they'll, you know, see, because it can't be too close, because the Brajabasis won't appreciate it if the Dwarkavasis are there and all that, because they don't like each other, right? And so therefore, then only when Krishna's walked that distance of what they can see, like that, and I think that's about, I'm not sure, it's 11 miles or something like that? That's how much you can see on the curvature of the earth there. So they would have to wait for Krishna to walk 11 miles before the Brajvasis wouldn't be able to see him anymore. And only at that time, then the Dwarkavasis could come forward and then greet him and everything. Because otherwise, that way, you don't want to mix the two, because that would be really bad. Yes? So, we have to remember that the Brajvasis and the Mathuravasis are all relatives. They're all friends. Right? They all go and meet at Krishna, Kurukshetra and things like that. They don't have any problem hanging out with each other.
But just a comparison, you know, between...
Just a comparison.
Because between two Dwarkavasis, like Uddhava and Akrura, you know, the mood is completely different when Uddhava comes visits Raj.
But they're two different devotees.
Yeah,
if Hanuman came and visited, it would be different again.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's just... Each devotee has his own flavor. But he's the point... He's been sent by... Mathura to bring Krishna to Mathura. In other words, it's time for Krishna's Mathura pastimes. And so there has to be some way it's going to go. And Krishna, it's not about just an activity or a duty, it's about the relationship with the devotees. Right? So therefore, then he's going to go to Mathura because of the Mathura devotees inviting him. If he had come earlier, then he wouldn't go. But now these pastimes have come to an end. Right? Because the Braj pastimes are basically, you can say, the prominence then for us are the Kaishore pastimes. So the Kaishore pastimes have ended now. Because now, then, at 11 years, 8 months, that makes them, by the Mahapurush time frame, 16 years old. So 16 means that's when you do the Dwarka pastimes.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Hmm? All good? No? Okay. The lotus feet of Krishna. So the point is that the religious principle is being followed. It's that we're following Krishna's laws. That's the whole point. It's not that, oh, this is some funny Indian system and that's for Indians. Right? And therefore, because the statement says, be Indian, buy Indian, I'm not Indian, I'm not buying it. Right? So, yeah. So therefore, that's not what it is. It's Krishna's laws. So therefore, you follow Krishna's laws. So following the laws or enacting the laws, that is religious principles. That's the whole point. They're non-different here. The lotus feet of Krishna are always worshipped by great mystic yogis. So I shall also worship his lotus feet and become one of his friends in Vrindavan, like the cowherd boys. Now how are we doing? Getting better now. Okay. When I bow down before Lord Krishna in that way, certainly he will place his fearless lotus hand on my head. His hand is offered to all conditioned souls who take shelter under his lotus feet. Oh, now you ruined it again, right? Yeah. So you have to... This is Dwarka. Because if we go by that, the demons aren't supposed to be there either. Because they really are not in the Braj mood, right? Right? Keshi was coming in and rolling on the ground in ecstasy because it's Braj and the dust. And seeing Govardhan Hill, he became stunned and like this and that. So then Kamsa had to send other friends to remind him he's come there to cleave Krishna, but he's in such ecstasy. And, you know, what's the need? And, right?
Yeah, but demons enhance the rasa between devotees.
The demons enhance the rasa, yeah. And this akura is really messing it up. Yes?
Actually.
How is he messing it up? He's coming into Vrindavan, he's rolling on the ground when he sees Krishna's footprints. Is that a bad thing? Right, I think the acharyas mentioned when you come to the Dham, you offer your obeisances to the Dham, you roll around a bit, it's not a big problem. Unless you're on the road and there's all the rickshaws coming by, then it may be a problem. Mm-hmm. So, the whole point is that the different devotees have different flavors, and so wherever they are, they will carry that flavor with them. Doesn't mean they don't appreciate other devotees. He appreciates that the devotion that the Brajvasis have is greater than the Mathuravasis, but he's a Mathuravasi. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So that's just the way it is. That's their taste. Like that. Can you accept that someone's greater than you? Let's say Modi, is he greater than you? Right? He runs the whole place and all that. We should give a different example than him. How about Dr. Radhakrishna? Like that. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, there'll be, but it doesn't mean that your position doesn't function and you don't go on nicely in life. So, it's not that that him as a Mathura Vasi can't appreciate that the surrender of the Brajavasis is so much greater and have respect for that, but he can still function within his position. See, it's by the materialistic concept that if someone's greater, I can't tolerate that. That's then where we will say is, oh, well, why wouldn't he switch? Why wouldn't he become a Brajavasi? Because it's not a competition. It's a matter of taste. So this is their taste on how this is the particular attraction they have to Krishna is in this kind of rati, where it has a mix of sweetness and majesty. Does that make sense? So then for them it's perfectly fine. And he's visiting Braja, they're visiting there. The yogic Brahmins live there in Vrindavan and they don't necessarily have the great mood, but they're there. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you appreciate this, you appreciate the eternal associates, then you develop the mood like those eternal associates. Otherwise, you can live there very nicely. Right? And they're quite happy doing what they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
That because of conditioned nature, always you want to take that material, imitate others, or take that idol. How to give it up that one?
That it's about following the footsteps, because if you imitate doesn't mean that you're doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you get the, you know, going to the karaoke bar and get the mic and start singing Michael Jackson, are you Michael Jackson? Mm-hmm. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, you don't have one of those hats, you gotta work on that. Right? So the whole thing is that imitation means that you're doing what they're doing. Following the footsteps, you're being done as what is the example. So what's the instruction? So if the instruction is a certain thing and they're doing that, which is acharya, then we follow that, it's not a problem. But there's areas that they may be doing that they don't talk about, you don't follow that. But the problem is we'll always go for the ones that they do that aren't instructed, because, you know, that idea that, you know, I'm independent, I can do what I like is the value, is the goal. So when our goal is to please Krishna, then the imitation part goes away. It's not important. The instruction is important, because we're in a different position. We're all different devotees, so we have different positions. So we don't have to do what they do to be part of the Braj scene. Imitation is always going to be a problem. Does that make sense? You catch the mood, you follow the mood. To do what people do, that doesn't mean you've caught the mood. Because if you do what others do and you don't have the right mood, people don't like that. But if you catch the mood, even though you're doing or not doing what they do, then they appreciate. Right? Because there's variety, spiritual variety. So it's not that we have to do what they're doing. We take part in that or support that. You know, it's just like, how many cooks can you fit in the kitchen? Yeah. But how many kitchen assistants can you fit into the kitchen?
Many.
Yeah, so if you have one cook and many assistants, that works. But if you have many cooks and no assistants, you have problem. Especially if they're French. You'll have to bring an ambulance. But, yes. You want to know about Poundraka?
No, I've wondered, because it's kind of a funny example. He puts a wooden arm to imitate Krishna. Is that to really make our attempt to imitate Krishna kind of ridiculous too? Is that the reason?
It's not that Poundraka's pastime makes our attempts ridiculous. We're already ridiculous in the beginning.
So we realize it.
Right? You know, how you say? The ridiculous 7 billion. You know, it's already there. Like that. But yes, it points out just how he tries and how he does things like that. You know, it's just his ego is so big that he can do that and actually think that he's doing great. But we see that. I mean, it's always a classic point of false ego that there's somebody, it's so obvious his illusion of what he's doing and what he thinks he is, that everybody else can see that. You know, so just Poundrika's doing that on the kingly level, that's all. You know, it's just so obvious. You had something?
Could it be seen that the difficulty perhaps in us trying to look at this is we still don't quite understand how position actually works, because we're coming from the point of view where we've lost our identity, so we're re-establishing identity through position, so therefore then we're attached to a particular way something functions. And
yes.
So when it moves, then we don't necessarily catch it.
Because if we identify with the position that's us, then if the position adjusts, then we don't have an identity. Because without an identity, how do you know how do you take part in it? Does that make sense? Like I have a pot, I have some cauliflowers, I have a spoon, I have a fire, I have myself. So who am I? You know, the existential question, where do I fit in? Am I the cauliflower? Am I the spoon? You know, like that. Am I the fire? Because the fire makes it cook, but I'm the one that's actually making it cook, so am I the fire? You know, so like that. So all the point is when we identify as Krishna's servant, then it's what service can I render in whatever the situation is. I already know what the conditioned nature is by principle. That's why the Varnashram, see, by knowing Varnashram, then our nature, we can deal with it in a steady way. If we don't use Varnashram, then we're going by what's available and what I think I can do, or what may be working right now. But if times change, then my whole identity's gone. But if I know that, okay, I have a particular nature and ability, so within that context, I can use that. Does that make sense? And so what's the variety of that? Because we have to take the whole variety. Like that. Let's say if I'm an office person, right? But within that office person, I could be sitting at a desk, I could be sweeping the floor, I could be changing the water, I could be, you know, working on some papers, I could be filing something, I could be copying something. All that's there. Now, I may have all those things only like, let's say, sitting at the desk. I don't like doing the copy stuff. But the point is, if copy stuff needs to be done, you can do it because you have the nature. Does that make sense? You know, so like let's say someone who has no arms, you wouldn't have them do the copy stuff because the only way they can hold the paper is with their teeth. But then by holding it with their teeth, if it gets a little wet when it goes through the machine, then they'll have a little bump there and so it won't work out nice. Plus the ink where it touches that wet part might bleed a bit. So you wouldn't want them doing the copy stuff. You know, especially if they had a cold. Right? You know, so it's just, you know, so you have to know the nature. Right? Was that absurd enough for you? Okay. So the whole point is that we know what the nature is and what it can do. Then whatever situation we're in, what are the options that you can apply this? Then we start. But if we identify as, okay, within this, no, I'm only the boss guy, or I'm only the second in charge, or I'm the guy who does the, you know, the more independent runaround stuff, or this, then if things change, then I can't function. But I can do all those things, so what is available, I do that. And then if it's outside your area of ability, you know, then you do what you can. You don't know cooking, you're in the kitchen, then you don't do the cooking, you help. Right? If you're bad with knives and you wash pots, you know. Does that make sense? If you have a tendency to drown, you mop the floor. You know, like that. Does that make sense?
It's always talked about the mood, that the mood should be proper.
Yes.
But some people, they catch the mood, and
right.
It's easy for them.
Right.
Some people, they don't catch the mood. And you can't really explain to them sense of tattva that this is the mood. What should be done?
It means you explain to them the principle of catching the mood, and if you can give any kind of symptoms, you do. And then expect that you'll be dealing with semantics of, you know, those symptoms, you know, until such time as they catch the mood. And if they don't catch the mood, then you situate them in something else. You find something that they can catch the mood. Like that. Because the idea is that the soul can catch the mood. It's just you have to find the medium through which they'll absorb themselves enough to be engaged in service, that they get purified, that then that mood becomes realization. So then it's just, in other words, training means a lot of work. So when one is willing to put that in, then Lord Chaitanya is very happy. But the idea of no work, then we go back to, you know, G's program here, the sport one, no pain, no gain. And if we think, no, but you know, I wanna be comfortable, then we go with what was the other one we had?
No risk, no fun.
You know, so whichever one you want to take, then. So that we're willing to make that endeavor to please the Lord and the Acharyas, then that's what they take. So in other words, we have to at some point give up our attachment, like I was saying before, earlier, to that mode of goodness where we don't want any trouble. Because in other words, we've identified all trouble as bad, rather than no material trouble is bad. Spiritual trouble is good. But as long as we see the two as trouble is trouble, it doesn't matter where, that means that's still that attachment to liberation. Right? That? So being liberated is okay, but being attached to it, now that's a problem. Right? Engaging the senses and getting facility, that's not a problem. It's the attachment to it's the problem. Right? So in other words, karma and jnana both have their eternal aspect, but they also have their temporary aspect. And we're attached to the temporary aspect, so it takes some time to get readjusted to the eternal aspects. Yes.
It appears that for Kanishtha Adhikari it's very difficult to catch the mood because all of his energy goes into mechanics. He has to figure it out.
Yes, yes.
And it takes a long time.
Yes.
So he can't relate to the Madhyama Sangha because he doesn't understand what these people are talking about because in his mind it's all...
So then he serves. So instead of trying to be part of their scene, he assists their scene. So in other words, if you are, in this case for Madhyamas, okay, you're serving Prashad rather than sitting down with them and, you know, shucking and jiving and doing the whole thing, and they're all going, who's this? I didn't invite him. I thought you invited him. Says, no, I don't even know where you, you know, like that, one of those. Then you do stuff where you can just assist. Like that. And if being closer, then it doesn't work, then you move yourself farther and farther back. You know, so in other words, okay, if you can take Prashad with them, fine. If not, you serve Prashad. If you can't do that, that doesn't work, then you help the servers in doing that. If that doesn't work, you go back into the kitchen and, you know, clean the kitchen or something. But the point is you're serving them, so you get the benefit of that association. So whatever you can handle of it. And then that will bring us forward. So the gradually, then that mood starts to... there. Because by association, we get the mood. That's the whole.
Because in many Kanishtha minds, Swajati association means sitting with the senior people and experience the same whatever they experience, but it doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't seem to work. But the point is there are activities they do. In other words, when they do activities that are designed for associating with others, then those activities are good together. Mm. But when it's them amongst themselves, that's the time when you have to know what one's level of realization, and then one assists that. You know, sees that, okay, they're all sitting there. Is it comfortable? Do they need anything? Do they need some water? You know, adjust anything, the temperature, the light, or this or that. And once that's done, then you've done your service. Then you go do something else, yeah. Right, then, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Is the Kanishtha even going to recognize these shifts of mood, that there's differences in all these situations are sort of subtle?
You go by the symptoms of, the external symptoms of advancement. Because if we can't catch by just someone's a Madhyama, by that, then we catch by symptoms, okay? They're a guru, they're a sannyasi, they're, you know, a temple president or GBC or something that they've been around way longer than I have, you know, or, you know, they're way older than I, you know, we just use those symptoms of respect. And then for that, then we respect that and we try to render some service. Because we may not catch the Adhikar. We may not have the Adhikar to understand Adhikar. Does that make sense? That's why the Vedic system is so perfect, because if you respect authority, advanced devotees are authority, but we may not be able to appreciate the actual position of authority, but we'll accept these other positions. That's why you generally see is that the main preachers, they come as acharyas. So they set it by example. They don't have to do that. But if they don't do that, then that doesn't actually necessarily work for many people. So therefore, then the, you know, so it's like Jara Bharat. We're hearing about it from his third life, you know, when he's preaching. Before that, then no one's understanding his position. He's on the same transcendental position, whether he's sitting out there in the field, guarding the field, you know, he's sitting in front of Kali waiting to have his head cut off, or he is sitting with the king and preaching to the king. His consciousness won't change. And Sukadeva Goswami, he's just walking around like a madman. And then when he comes into the assembly of the sages, taking on that madhyama mood, then he preaches. Does that make sense? So in other words, an uttama as an uttama, then we won't understand. But the uttama takes the position of madhyama, then we understand. But the whole point is preaching means you're creating an environment for the preaching mission. Is the front part is what's your interface with the kanistas. But it also has that phases. Once you get to that, then it moves to the part where you nourish the Krishna consciousness. You cultivate the Krishna consciousness in them personally. So a lot of that can be in generic, but there's also, you know, that's more specific as you advance. But then there also has to be what's the goal. That's why Lord Chaitanya has three purposes for coming. So the Samkirtan mission is the first of it, but cultivating the devotees is the second, and tasting that love that Radharani has for Krishna, that's the third. So you have to know the whole thing, but you have to know where you're fitting in. And if we only say it's the first one, that's it, that's the total package, that means we don't actually know enough. We know a good part and we can take part, and by doing that, if we do that long enough, at some point we'll notice that there's something else. Right? So then that's better than someone who sees the last two and doesn't see the first one, because they don't have the foundation in which to get the... They're doing the activities, but then they're imitating because they don't have the mood and all that, the purity to function in that. Does that make sense? So the mission means all three are known, but the emphasis is on the first. Does that make sense? So in the first, that has all the form, therefore all the levels of respect, the institutional aspects, the religious aspects, and so from that, then we can kind of get an idea. Does that make sense? Akura continued thinking. By offering charity to that lotus hand, Purandara and Bali earned the status of Indra, king of heaven. And during the pleasure pastimes of the rasa dance, when the Lord wiped away the gopis' perspiration and removed their fatigue, the touch of their faces made that hand as fragrant as a sweet flower. Right, so Akura is able to appreciate all the different pastimes. So the point is it's just they're situated according to their taste. So the point is there's no difference of opinion in all the Vaishnavas in the spiritual world. We're the ones that see, oh, this is Vaikuntha, this is lower, this is higher, not. They just all see it as a matter of taste. That's the point. So it's not a matter of higher or lower. Right? So then it's a matter of taste. But now in the taste, then we see that there's more and more intense. So that taste that gives the highest pleasure to Krishna, that is then the Brajbasis. But the whole point is none of the Vaishnavas see any problem between one and the other. Does that make sense? And if they do, they just stay in their realm and that's it. You know. But someone like Akura, they can go between the two. Or Uddhava can go between the two. Nard Muni can go between any of them. And some of them, you see, don't go between because they can't relate to something outside. They don't have as much adhikar. It means on the principle of tattva they can relate, but on the principle of rasa, then they don't appreciate. Yeah.
The gopis, they also don't go anywhere else except for Kurukshetra, not because of their adhikar, but because of the intensity of their love for Krishna.
It's just that that's where it can be expressed. What I'm saying. It means they're in Braja, then they're tasting being with Krishna. Then they're in Braja and tasting separation. Now, where can they go and taste separation and be with Krishna? I mean, Kurukshetra, right? So so that's why they move in that sphere. Because that's their taste. Because why would they need to be in the other place? If they want to function in that environment, then all the gopis in Braj, they expand and they become all the queens. So the 16,108 prominent gopis, they become the queens in Dwarka. So it's just that's and then they're taking part there. But otherwise, as Brajvasis, then other than formally meeting with them at special occasions, because they're all related, so it's not a problem meeting other family members. But, you know, it's just like, let us say everyone's getting together for whatever it is, a family reunion, a big marriage, or something like that. And so then you have hundreds of relatives all coming together and this and that. So, you know, it's not a problem. You can move around, talk to everybody, this, that, what your relationships are, you can do and this and that, right? It's not a problem. But then after the program's over, you go back to your environment. Right? So it's not a problem to be functioning within these where the different realms meet. It's just that it'll be a special occasion when they meet. And so for that, then one follows that protocol. But then after that, you go back to your natural position. Like, would you want it to be a family reunion every day? No, like that. So that's the way it went. You want to get back to your place, your scene. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Krishna's hand is capable of bestowing benedictions on all kinds of men if they take to Krishna consciousness. If one wants material happiness like the King of Heaven, he can derive that benediction from the hand of Krishna. If one wants liberation from the pangs of material existence, he can also get that benediction from the hand of Krishna. And if one, in pure transcendental love for Krishna, wants personal association and the touch of his transcendental body, he can also gain that benediction from his hand. Right? So it all comes from Krishna. Whatever you want, it's all from Krishna. So the point is connect things to Krishna. Then, depending upon what is interested, what is the taste, then there's different situations in which that connection is there. Right? So therefore, if one wants that pure love for Krishna, then that defines that, then it should be done just to please Krishna. And if you want material benefit, like we saw others, then they approach, then it's still about Krishna. Akura continued thinking, the infallible Lord will not consider me an enemy, even though Kamsa sent me here as his messenger. After all, the omniscient Lord is the actual knower of the field of this material body. And with his perfect vision, he witnesses both externally and internally all the endeavors of the conditioned soul's heart. Thus he will cast his smiling, affectionate glance upon me as I remain fixed with joined palms, fallen in obeisances at his feet. Yeah, so Krishna knows, so we can't cheat Krishna. Like that. We may cheat others, but Krishna's not going to fall for it. Then all my contamination will at once be dispelled, and I will give up all doubts and feel the most intense bliss. So by that surrendering to Krishna, that position, then all one's contamination is removed, one's doubts are dispelled, so then one will then come to the transcendental position. So that's the whole point. If we absorb ourselves in Krishna consciousness, then we can come to that position. Because by performing Krishna consciousness, Krishna being pleased, that removes all the impurities, and then by Krishna's grace the doubts are removed, and then one is able to take up Krishna consciousness. So that's the process. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Akura was afraid. However, because he had been deputed by Kamsa. Akura was afraid, however, because he had been deputed by Kamsa, the enemy of Krishna. English is so weird, isn't it? Yeah, it means here. Akura was afraid, however, because he had been deputed by Krishna, by Kamsa, the enemy of Krishna, right? Or, Akura was afraid, however, because he had been deputed by Kamsa, the enemy of Krishna. You understand? Two totally different opposite meanings. Such a weird language. Does any other language work like that? That is it. Yeah. Yeah, I guess maybe there can be a pride, right, in the language. Only our language can do all these weird things. Everyone else is logical and, you know, has, you know, like that. He thought, I am going to see Krishna as a messenger of the enemy. At the same time, he thought, Krishna is in everyone's heart as the super soul, so he must know my heart. Although Akura was trusted by the enemy of Krishna, his heart was clear. Right? So he didn't have impurity. There wasn't haziness on his part. Right? So even though he's saying, when I see Krishna, my heart will become purified, then I'll be without doubt and this and that, he's already on that platform. Otherwise, why is it Prabhupada saying here he has clarity of thought? Because it's only when there's an artist, then there's that haziness. Right? He was a pure devotee of Krishna. He risked becoming Kamsa's deputy just to meet Krishna. He was certain that although he was going as a representative of Kamsa, Krishna would not accept him as an enemy. Even though I am on a sinful mission, being deputed by Kamsa, when I approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I shall stand before him with all humility and folded hands. Surely he will be pleased with my devotional attitude. And maybe he will smile lovingly and look upon me and thereby free me from all kinds of sinful reactions. Akura continued. Recognize means, so in other words, Krishna will see what's the actual mentality, what's the purpose. So that's, I think there's a name for Krishna. Where he just takes the essence of what the devotee's mood is.
Saragrahi.
Yeah, so then Krishna being Saragrahi just sees what's the actual purpose and why one's doing so. He's not taking other aspects. He'll just take that aspect. You know, just like with Putana. He just takes that she's going to feed him milk. So he takes that aspect and kind of finesses the rest. Right? So that's the principle. And then the devotees that see like that also are known as Saragrahi. So you have Saragrahi Krishna, and then the Vaishnavas having that mood, then they become Saragrahi Vaishnavas. Sri Akrura continued thinking, recognizing me as an intimate friend and relative, Krishna will embrace me with his mighty arms, instantly sanctifying my body and diminishing to nil all my material bondage, which is due to fruitive activities. Having been embraced by the all-famous Lord Krishna, I will humbly stand before him with bowed head and joined palms, and he will address me, my dear Akura. At that very moment, my life's purpose will be fulfilled. Indeed, the life of anyone whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead fails to recognize is simply pitiable. Another one of the English things, right? Because you expect it to go. Indeed, the life of anyone whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead, recognizes, becomes, like that. But no, it's just the other one. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, certainly Krishna and Balaram will call me Akura, uncle, and at that time my whole life will be glorious. Unless one is recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his life cannot be successful. It is clearly stated here that one should try to be recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by one's service and devotion, without which the human form of life is condemned. So we want to please Krishna, so we're always trying to do those things that will please Krishna. And in that way, then, being recognized by the Lord, then one's life becomes successful. But if one doesn't do that, then it doesn't work out very good. Right? Then we go to the previous one of no matter how nice you decorate, you know, the dead body, it's always going to be a dead body. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sri Akura continued thinking, "The Supreme Lord has no favorite and no dearmost friend, nor does he consider anyone undesirable, despicable, or fit to be neglected. All the same, he lovingly reciprocates with his devotees in whatever manner they worship him, just as the trees of heaven fulfill the desires of whoever approaches them." Footnote 13. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 22 to Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 4, entitled The Factual Truth of Krishna, Bhagavat Sarupa Tattvam, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakura's book. So the factual truth is that Krishna sees everybody equally. That's just how he sees. So no one's fit or unfit to be connected with him. But the difference is that those who do positively approach him and interact with him, then those individuals he responds to in also affectionate way. Right? You deal with him mechanically, he'll reciprocate mechanically. Right? You deal with him simply as authority, he reciprocates as the authority. So anybody can therefore take shelter of the Lord. So this principle of someone may have been doing whatever they're doing, but if they take shelter of the Lord, then you take it from that position, because everybody can take shelter of the Lord and begin there, because that's the natural position. Does that make sense? Let us say, the child's supposed to go to school, okay? But we find out that, you know, when it's recess, that they go out with their friends and play and don't come back, or before they even got to school, they went out and played and didn't go to school. Right? So, is that correct or not? No, they shouldn't be doing that. So now, finding out that they do this, then what would be the suitable punishment?
No recess.
No recess, but what about not going to school?
Who's suffering?
The parents, because they won't get the degree and they won't get like that. They can't tell their friends. So. Yeah. Then the other aspect is, let's say that they have been, you know, a really bad student and playing truant and this and that. Then finally they see the importance of education, and then now they want to, you know, be a proper student and all that. So now the teachers say, "No, sorry, that boat has sailed. You can't go to school." That's another thing. You understand the principle? So the point is the soul being servant of Krishna, that's the natural position. So no matter what nonsense they're doing, if they decide that that's the real thing to do, that sincere understanding, then from that point you take them from that. You don't go from the other. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So this idea, so we can understand, is that's why then in the Vaishnav tradition, retribution isn't actually considered a very important thing. Right? Because we're taking it that, no, justice is the natural position rather than devotional service is the natural position. So because justice has been broken, therefore justice should be served. But it's serving Krishna is the natural position. So then if anything's wrong, then the only cure for it is, In other words, the person's not going to school, so they're in ignorance. What's the solution? That they have to be educated. And if they do come to the point they appreciate it, then they continue in the education, because that's the natural position. Right? So in the same way, for the soul, it's the natural position. So whenever they take it up, that's considered good. Right? So therefore, Krishna doesn't see that anybody's unfit to become a devotee. Because at any time that they do take it up, then they're there. Because otherwise, if that was the condition, then how would you define, you know, who's fit? So then, you know, we might not qualify, right? We'd have to head to South Indians into the Smarta, section of town, and then from there start to recruit. Does that make sense? Yeah. Nothing? And then Lord Krishna's elder brother, the foremost of the Yadus, will grasp my joined palm hands while I am still standing with my head bowed. And after embracing me, he will take me to his house. There will be honor. There he will honor me with all items of ritual welcome and inquire from me about how Kamsa has been treating his family members. Right? So one may think that, no, why would he do all this? He's come on because of the relationship. So it's a matter of when you think, no, but this is all about him. But it's not. He's talking about how nicely Krishna and Balaram will follow all the different etiquettes as an expression of affection. So it's all about the affection of the devotees, because this is how he behaves. This is why the Vedic culture is the way it is, because this is how Krishna likes to do things. Yes?
In modern society, it would be considered, you know, hypocrisy to do like that. He comes to take you away, he is the servant of your enemy, but you still worship him. What is this?
Yeah, because they're not dealing with devotion and they're not dealing with relationships. So the point is that he's come there because he can see Krishna. Just like Maharaj Yudhishthira is not interested in doing a big yajna, but because by doing that yajna, Krishna will come to Hastinapur or Intraprastha to help. Therefore, he does the yajna. So whatever brings about Krishna consciousness, then that's fine. Because we're looking at it from a matter of gain and safety. What will, you know, the artha aspect. It means we perform dharma for artha, rather than performing dharma for moksha or for bhakti. Because even if it's for moksha, what does it matter? As long as you're getting liberated. So by doing something in a detached way, then hosting someone who is your enemy wouldn't be a problem. Right? Because you're detached. And then in the bhakti is that you're seeing everyone as servant of Krishna. It means you're being careful of the niti aspect. It doesn't mean that when you host an enemy that you're not careful. You know, there may be certain portions of the house that he goes to or not, doesn't go to, or how you deal or what you mention. But the point is you deal in a pleasant way. Even on the platform of karma, you deal in a pleasant way, because if in the future things change, then, if the relationship becomes good, then there's no, you know, how you say? Is it the... No, that's water under the bridge. Bad... What is it? Bad something? You have bad something? So you can't have the relationship because of so much bad... No, it's a phrase.
Bad blood.
Bad blood, yes. If there's too much bad blood, then you can't function, even though everything's normal now. Or, let's say you're a senior king, he's a junior king, and you deal with him not nicely, then in the future, when he comes the bigger king, now you got trouble. Now, if you had dealt with him nicely as a smaller king, then they know that you're nice. Because if you're senior and you still deal nice, then that means you're properly behaved. Then, when they become bigger, then even though they may want to control or this or that, there'll be some, you know, professional consideration. You know? Does that make sense? So, from all platforms, you know, that's why Dharma says that you should do. From karma, jnana, or bhakti, from all levels, it's an advantage.
Is this the Vaikuntha mood? Because Akura, he's so sure how Krishna is going to be. So is that... And we see that in Braj, it may not necessarily work out.
No, because how Krishna will respond, that you know. That's what they're going to do. But then the detail of it, that's what you then see. But the actual principle, because there's etiquette, it's either the science of the etiquette or the science of the rasa. So the etiquette's based on the rasa. So you follow the rasa properly, the etiquette will work properly. You know, or with some, you know, minor training, then one will know what to do. Because one sees the connection. So there's never a problem between bhakti and tattva, or between the philosophy and the religion. We make that, because we're coming from the material world is known as the world of duality, or the world of names. So we generally see as if there's a doubt comes up on these points. It's always in connection with the world of names, you know, some semantics or kind of like that, etymological things like that, or it'll be based on the duality. You know, that this always creates, you know, pain, so then we want the opposite, or, you know, how can that be good, or, you know, any of these kind of things, because we make it into duality. the spiritual world, there's no duality, there's variety. Like that, because in the spiritual world there's no good and bad, it's all good. It's just variety. But here we'll say, this is good, that's bad. So generally we see is up to now, all our problems come from these, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, so, in other words, we've interpreted the eternal position of the spiritual world and the happiness gained there as, I will be happy materially, eternally. Right? So anything that changes, you know, the mood was this and now it changes to that, we'll see it is not eternal. And so then that, how is that? How could that happen? Or we'll take it that, I wouldn't call this happiness, so why is this called happiness? Why is this happening? So,
So Akrura's contemplation of how Krishna is going to react with him is basically depicting the culture.
It's depicting the culture, but it's based on the affection that Krishna has for the devotees. So how he's going to deal with them as a devotee is what he's seeing. But then the culture will be done. Mm-hmm. Like if the gopis are thinking about being with Krishna, what are they going to think about? Right? The particular culture that's there in the interaction between of the conjugal rasa. So then he's the uncle and they're maturavasis, and so therefore that formality that's going to be there, how he'll come in, he'll deal like that, because you have the combination that they're in the position and that aspect will be there, but at the same time as he is the supreme lord and they're the servants. So it will have that mix of these two flavors. Because Vaikuntha, it'll only be the awe and reverence. Vrindavan, it'll just be the sweetness. But Mathura will be that mix of both. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So you're going to see both of them. And it's not a problem for them. They can deal with both of them because they have the relationship. And so the etiquettes for the relationship will be followed. At the same time, they're devotees, so their etiquette for the position of master and servant is also followed. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's the thing. If it's connected to Krishna, then there's no contradiction. That's the whole thing. Everything's reconciled within Krishna. Mm. So that's why for the Vaishnavas there is nothing contradictory. Mm. But on the material platform, because of our conditioning to duality, then we will generally always see contradiction. But that's the whole point. That's why you see in the prayers that are being offered by the devotees, then they're offering these prayers that are defining these points. You always see is they make the prayers are generally always bringing out the contradiction.
Mm-hmm, yes.
How he's, how you say he creates the material world, but he's aloof. He controls everything, but he's not controlled. Mm-hmm. You know, he sets the laws, but he's not bound by any laws. You know, so they're always showing this seeming duality. But with Krishna, that's perfect. So that's why there's no problem in any of these flavors.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.